This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Let's get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن نوجد السلام.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
And Brian with an I, Erickson.
And on tonight's show, political correspondent David Elliott with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Relationship issues with Counselor Jose Mayui. Did I say that right? Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Tomorrow, probably, hopefully, will be the deciding day in the Democratic primaries. In this hour, Mark Walsh from the Clinton campaign, and in the next hour, Tobias Wolf from the Obama campaign. Tonight, News Wrap leads off our second hour, and we'll have an announcement about the Lucy Blue Tremblay concert coming up Saturday. But first, this is fundraising time at KPFT.
Yes, and we're asking you to make that pledge, and we're getting down to the end of the pledge drive, I think.
We did great the first week. We did horrible the second
week.
Yes,
I guess I wasn't there the first week, so that's probably why.
Leave now, Jack.
Okay.
No, what we need people to do, support this station, support this show. Call 713-526-5738. There's lots of ways to donate, small and large amounts, on plastic. You can do it through our little PayPal friend on the internet.
Yes. Or a brown paper sack with small bills.
Or large bills.
Or large bills. Very large bills.
That has been done before.
Yeah, check, $10 a month, one-time $1,000 check. If you've given, you can give again. If you've never given, then by golly, it's time that you did.
I know a lot of people are probably busy tonight,
you know,
getting ready for the election. If you're working the polls, I know people are working to set it up. If you're working outside the polls or you're calling for that final, you know, pitch for your candidate, I know that's all important, but it's also important to keep this station going because over the years we've been able to talk about a lot of stuff that goes on in the community, goes on in politics, all the different things that goes on, and not only this show, so many other shows on this radio station, from Democracy Now!, which is a national show, to so many of the wonderful local shows that are done here locally. And talks about issues here in the community. So we're asking you to pick up the phone, call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
I was just going to say that, this is a community-sponsored station. It is you. You are the sponsors of this of our show, as well as all of the other shows on KPFT. The diverse programming that's possible here is made possible by your charitable donations that you give to us. You pay for it. You get what you want. You can suggest, you can be part of this show and all the other shows that are programmed here on KPFT.
It is tax deductible.
Yes, it is. And you can just take the time, write that check, use your credit card, do PayPal, whatever you can. Please take the time to call the station and donate to, it's 713-526-5738.
And I would say we have lovely operators standing by, but I'm not so sure on the issue of lovely, and they're sitting down, so. But they're very nice people.
Everybody's a 10 on the
radio. Bob's out there, and Matt. Matt's going to be helping us with pitching later on. And, it's Glenn comes in and volunteers his time. Jack comes in and volunteers his time. Jennifer comes in and volunteers her time. I come in and volunteer my time. Plus, we spend time when we're not on the air trying to get guests, doing research, getting information. So a lot of work goes into putting this show together every week. So we do our part by doing our bit to make the show happen, you do your part by picking up that phone and calling 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. You know, we get such a charge when that phone rings.
Oh, gosh, and, yes.
And you can make it ring, and you'll know that it's your call that's coming in. Just think how exciting that is.
And we'll identify you on the air if you choose to be identified, or you can just be anonymous again, that large family of anonymous, which is fine with us. But the main thing is that you're supporting us.
And if they want to make glowing remarks about how much they love the program, we'll gladly accept that and say that on the air, too.
Oh, yes. Along with a check.
Yes. And if you have suggestions or ideas for the show that you'd like to throw out, then feel free to do that. We'll announce it on the air. Call us, 713-526-5738. And I think we may have our friend David.
No, we're still working on getting David Elliott.
I mean, it's hard trying to get that can stretch from here to Washington, D.C.
Stretching the string even.
Yeah, yeah. That I remember the old days of KPFT when that was the way we had to do it.
Well, do you remember when Jimmy Garper, I mean, literally ran cable down the street and duct taped it down the street?
No, that was me.
Oh, that was you.
Oh, okay. That would be me.
Well, we have the string strung.
Yes.
So go ahead.
We ran wires down the street when we did that remote for Pride. I think you were. Were you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It was at the Love It Inn, which is about half a block away.
Which is my place where I usually vote. Well, actually, I don't usually vote there. I usually early vote, but it's my precinct.
Uh-huh.
So I think we have David Elliott on the other can now.
David?
Well, hello there.
Hi, darling.
How are y'all?
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for sending some of your weather down here today.
Well, I don't know what happened down there, Jack, but it got warm here, and people are actually eating dinner outside, but not.
Well, that's really bizarre, because all of last week, or last 11 days of early voting, we had almost the most perfect weather, except for one day it rained, but actually the weather was a little bit too perfect, because I was peeling like crazy. I was working most of the early voting, handing out push cards for the caucus, but it was absolutely incredible to see all those people out there early vote. In fact, I'm not sure if you read this in the paper, but on Friday, when the early voting closed down, my understanding where the place I was working, there was still a two-hour line before people finally got to vote. But in some places, and there was 35 locations in Harris County to early vote, some of the people were still waiting in line at 10 p.m.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
And it's good.
It's good.
It's democracy in action.
But it's just incredible that, you know, somebody will show up at 5 o'clock on the last day and say, oh, there's a line? Well.
Well, what's going on in Washington? Tell us, David.
Well, Jack, I thought that I would give you all an election preview.
Really?
I know everybody's talking about Texas. You know, the polls open in I want to say 11 hours from now down in Houston.
Yes, that's correct.
But we also have Vermont, Rhode Island, and Ohio voting, and I thought that I would walk you through a preview and some predictions, if you would allow me.
Yes, please do.
We love your predictions.
We're too close to the trees here, so having an outside perspective might be good.
Well, good, because, you know, the fact is, I have a very high degree of confidence in calling the results of two of the four states that are going to be voting tomorrow. Those two states being Vermont and Texas. Two other states that are going to be voting, Ohio and Rhode Island, I do not have a high degree of confidence in calling, but let's walk through this.
Okay.
Vermont's going to be a massacre. The Clinton campaign hasn't really contested it. The Obama ground game, if you will, is very, very strong. I'm predicting a vote of 67% for Obama, 31% for Clinton, 2% for Kucinich. Vermont people like Kucinich a whole lot for some reason.
And somehow they didn't get the word.
Yeah, they didn't get the word. That's right. Texas, folks, I know the polls in Texas are very, very, very close, but based on early voting numbers I've looked at in the various counties, I think it's going to be a significant victory for Obama. What I'm predicting is Obama 56%, Clinton 44%. I believe the delegate count is going to be more lopsided than that because of the way that the primary vote delegates are allocated, and I'm not going to go on into
And I'm pretty impressed that you study this, because even some of the junkies like us, we had to learn a lot about that in the past couple weeks of how all this stuff was done. And it's sort of interesting. Some of those people who voted for Kinky has actually sort of made it worse for Hillary. Not that they meant to do it, but it's just the way that it happened.
Right. The fact of the matter is that the state senatorial districts that are based in Austin, Houston urban area, Dallas urban area, are going to be weighted more heavily, and those are all Obama bases. Whereas the parts of the state that Hillary Clinton is going to carry don't get as many state Senate delegates. But there's something else on top of that, and that's the fact that one-third of the delegates that will be allocated tomorrow are allocated by caucus.
Yes.
And Obama has done a pretty good job of identifying close to 8,000 precinct captains. And Hillary really only got her ground game going recently. In fact, the most heavy training was going on this past weekend in Texas, in 17 different parts of the state for Hillary. And the Obama folks had, frankly, already done the training. So on Saturday and Sunday, they were able to do GOTV phone calls and concentrate on that, on getting people out to the polls on Tuesday, whereas the Clinton folks were still being trained. So there's a bit of a weakness, and you hear anecdotal reports from around the state of Texas. I've been checking in with some of my journalism friends. Your anecdotal reports around the state about Hillary not having as strong a field operation in the state of Texas overall, perhaps, as Obama has. And that's why, even though the polls are very, very close in Texas, I actually think that it's going to be a 10 to 12 point victory tomorrow evening for Obama.
Okay.
Now, let me run through the rest of the states, if I may. Rhode Island is very tough to call because there's only been one polling outfit out of Brown University that's polled it, and in part because, well, it's Rhode Island. Nobody historically has paid any attention to it, right?
Right.
Hillary has a strong lead there. She has strong infrastructure there. The local Democratic Party supports her strongly. She's got strong union support. But all of a sudden, they've had 15,000 new voter registrations, primarily among young people. I think Obama is going to carry it just barely. I'm calling Rhode Island Obama 52, Clinton 48. No percentage votes there. Now, finally, this brings us to Ohio. And this is a tough state to call. Obama's got the energy, but Clinton's energy has picked up as well. Her rallies have been very well attended. She's got a wonderful woman there as her field director working the state. Best in the country, best in the business. Obama's got some union support. Clinton's got a lot of union support. Clinton is going to do extraordinarily well in the southern half of the state. Appalachia, some other rural farming areas. There have been some issues raised. There are actually some Democratic voters that think that Obama is a Muslim who will not recite the Pledge of Allegiance or sing the Star Spangled Banner or what have you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw that interview, I believe it was today, on one of the networks, and it's just unbelievable that belief is out there.
Well, people get an email that says whatever,
and then
they just send it on to all their friends as a kind of a knee-jerk reaction without really thinking through or doing a check on it. Snopes.com, and there's another site that I heard about that's also a really good place to check out. When you get stuff like this, you should question it.
Deb, you're absolutely right. Absolutely. But, you know, this is how political campaigns are waged. And it's not even that you know, I have no evidence whatsoever that the Clinton campaign is, you know, behind any sort of smear attack, or I think better of her. I think more highly of her. But like you say, somebody might get an email. They might be a Democrat who has had no contact with any of the campaigns, or they might be a Republican, or
yes.
they just forwarded.
Yes.
Right. And David, I just want to say, you know, as a Hillary supporter, I have to agree with what your comments have been about the lack of organization here in Texas. It was woefully lacking, and I'm very disappointed in that.
I am too, yes.
But... And I'm very excited and glad that there's all this energy and these young people that are interested. But you know what? I'm not sure that young people see the world the same way as those of us who are no longer quite so young. And I think a lot of people need to look at some issues and concerns that, because I am concerned about the young people. I am concerned about what follows. In fact, we've paved the path for them to be where they are now. I'm not so sure they're looking after us the same way. And also, I want to remind people that regardless of how you voted in the early vote, you can sign in as a delegate for the other candidate if you have changed your mind. And there's a lot of people sitting on the fence still. So,
well, Deb, I'll echo your comments and agree with you and endorse your comments. And I want to make one additional point. We've got two, I believe, phenomenal candidates out there.
Agreed.
We're going to have either the first woman nominee of a major party in this country, or we're going to have the first African-American nominee of a major party in this country. And I will proudly, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, my
personal, as long as you don't use any of the seven deadlies, you can say what you wish.
I will proudly support either of those candidates in November against anything the Republicans can throw up against us. I'll say, because I want to, if I can, just finish my Ohio prediction.
Yes, please.
I actually think that the two candidates are going to tie, 49.5% to 49.5%. But I also think it's kind of a cop-out to go on to this radio show and say you're going to predict an election and then say that you're predicting a tie. So I'm going to go ahead and call it Hillary Clinton winning Ohio by 0.5 percentage point. Now,
wow.
One note on Ohio. Clinton is going to build an early lead, and then Obama will chip away at it as the results come in from one county in particular. I don't know how to pronounce this. Cuyahoga County.
It's
the county that includes
that's
Cleveland.
The
makes
famous
up about,
one that I think is using paper ballots.
They are using paper ballots. They make up 12 to 13% of the state's population. It's an Obama base. They're going to be reporting late. So, you know, if you turn on at 9 or 10 o'clock at night and you see that Hillary is 5 points ahead in Ohio, it's not over for Obama. That margin will go down. And I'm telling you, I do not think we will go to bed tomorrow night knowing who won Ohio. I also, by the way, don't think we'll go to bed knowing what the exact delegate apportionment out of Texas is.
Yes.
You know, there are people going to be standing in line in Texas waiting an hour or two to vote. I know that the Texas Democratic Party has put the word out that everybody who is in line to vote at 7 o'clock, A, will get to vote, and B, will get to caucus. But you can see how if the caucuses get going an hour, 2 hours late, it's going to be 3 hours before we get all of the results in. And, you know, maybe particularly from some highly populated urban Senate districts and from maybe some of the outlying rural districts, it's going to be 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock your time before, at least.
Some of the caucuses are
the results.
The precinct conventions can start as late as 9 p.m., but they can start by 9 p.m. regardless. That's the cutoff time.
Oh, okay.
So,
so even if there's people voting at 9 p.m., you can still start the caucus.
Apparently so.
See, you learn something new. The other interesting thing, David, I don't know if you heard this, but the Dallas Morning News endorsed Huckabee.
Yes, I read that. What an interesting piece. They're looking for toward the future of the Republican Party.
Well, the future for the Republican Party.
Are you sure it wasn't their April 1st issue?
No. But
it's still March. No, it wasn't April 1st.
The future of the Republican Party will still be hating gays.
Yes.
Apparently.
Very interesting. Now, one final prediction to leave you all with. Ohio is very, very important tomorrow. I know that we all are about Texas. It's where you are. It's my home state. If Hillary were to lose all four states, the pressure on her to withdraw by about Thursday is going to become intense and perhaps insurmountable.
Yes.
But if she even wins Ohio by a point or two, her folks are going to be able to make an argument to continue the campaign on to Pennsylvania next month. So that's a subplot. It might be inside baseball. I don't know. But that's something to keep an eye out for. And look, I want to say, I know some people want the race to be over, but there's actually an argument to be made for it continuing to Pennsylvania, and that's this. Pennsylvania is going to be a tough state. They've got a lot of military veterans there. John McCain is a military veteran. The Democrats are going to need to do some grassroots work in Pennsylvania to be competitive, and so the 7 weeks between tomorrow and the Pennsylvania primary would afford the candidates the opportunity to do that. And whoever emerges, you know, next August at the Democratic Convention in Denver, they will be better served waging their campaign in Pennsylvania if the campaign goes forward. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Pennsylvania being my home state, I just love the somebody recently said Pennsylvania's got Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in the middle.
Oh, gosh. Well, David Elliott joins us the first Monday of every month. He's the communications director for the National Coalition Against the Death Penalty. When he's not blogging or calling in to Queer Voices to give us his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices, David.
Thank you all for having me, and please, everybody vote tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yes, and before you vote, you know, you could pick up the phone and call us at 713.
You can vote now.
Yes,
you can vote for KPFT.
You can vote for KPFT. Give you your endorsement to KPFT.
You can vote for Queer Voices.
That's
because
right.
More importantly,
You can vote for Jennifer. Vote with your check.
Well, that's the next campaign we got to work on because Jennifer's running for Grand Marshal.
Is she now?
Yes.
One of the people for Grand Marshal. There's some really good candidates.
Yes, I know, but we've been so involved with all these other races.
Yeah, these other things that seem to be distracting.
Well, before we get on to who will be the Grand Marshal for Pride, we do need you to vote now with your pledge of support to KPFT 713-526-5738. It's a magic number, 713-526-KPFT, for those of you who are numerically challenged. I'm one of those that when you're giving phone numbers, I'm alphabetically challenged. That
most
always confuses me.
Yeah.
So I just like to say 713-526-5738. Go to your phone now. Pick up the receiver. Or maybe you have a headset. You don't even have to pick up the
receiver. You sound
like
a Svengali.
I know. Shh. And then take your little digit, one of your digits, and press 713-526-5738. Make those phones ring, and then the volunteer will assist you and will help you make your pledge in
That's
whatever
right.
amount that you're willing to give.
Yes, write the number 1 to 9 and many zeros behind it.
And really, a basic annual membership of $60, that's not a lot to ask. And we appreciate it so much. We really need your support. We need to make our goal tonight. Please call us at 713-526-5738. We have a great episode coming up.
What do you think?
Segment. We have Jose, Mamie, close. He goes, eventually they'll get it. And he's a counselor, and he's going to talk about one of the favorite things that we love to talk about on
Queer Voices.
Yeah, well, whatever. Which is relationships, and there's all kinds of relationships, and so he'll be with
us.
Yes, and he'll explain it to you, and then maybe you will be able to find one. But it's so important. Right now, call with your pledge of support. Make those phones ring. 713-526-5738.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and we have in our studio Josue Mimi. And
go ahead and swing Deborah's microphone over to him there so he can speak.
And here's a headset for
you.
And
Jennifer.
We just sort of ran him in here quickly because of this fundraising and all. And Josue is a counselor. And tell us exactly the title, because I don't have it written in front of me.
That's not a problem. I'm Josue Mimi is my name, and I'm a licensed professional counselor. And I have a practice here in Midtown Houston.
And one of the things, one of the many things, you were on the show before, and we started talking about relationships, and we actually talked about parenting. We got sidetracked on that, and I wanted you to come back and talk about relationships. And my probably the most important one for me is, what's the most important thing that we should work on in a relationship, or what's the essence? I've had some pretty less than successful, I'd like to know the secret.
Well, I have to say that I've been dating for 30 years now, and so I've had lots of practice at relationships.
Successfully, I hope.
Well, lots of them have been failures, actually. But in my mid-30s, I realized that I needed to discover how men tick, how women tick, how relationships work, so that I can, one, teach myself, and two, teach my clients. But, you know, I get that question asked quite a bit. You know, what's one thing that I can tell people about relationships? And quite honestly, the most important thing is be an adult.
Be an adult. Now, see, I would have thought communication. I heard everything, and then I read about, and they're always talking about you got to be able to communicate.
Well, I think that's certainly true, because most often we communicate poorly in our relationships. But if you kind of peel the onion a little bit, you'll realize that when we communicate poorly, we're acting from what I call a child mentality.
Ooh.
Wah.
Exactly.
Oh.
Now, basically,
but it's always them that act that way.
Well, let's back up a little bit. The truth of the matter is that everyone has what I call an adult mentality and a child mentality within them.
Okay.
Now, an adult mentality is this, and let me just define some qualities here. It's an adult is responsible, reliable, in charge of his or her own behavior. A child mentality, on the other hand, is irresponsible, unreliable, and wants to control everybody else. In addition, a child mentality wants to play all the time, wants to throw temper tantrums when he or she doesn't get what he or she wants, and uses intimidation tactics when they're angry and wanting to manipulate someone else.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's basically, and I've written a booklet, let me plug that for a little bit.
Go right ahead.
10 qualities you want in a friend, a lover, an employee, and a business partner, and 21 that you don't want.
Oh.
Where detail 10 qualities of the adult and 21 qualities of the child mentality.
Wow. Now, when we talk about a child mentality, I guess the question I would ask, some of the things you were saying, I said, ooh, gee, that sort of fits me sometimes. So this fits. How do we, is it a matter of controlling it? Is it a matter of recognizing it and doing something? Give me a couple of secrets on when we catch ourselves being a child.
Great. First of all, we have to recognize that everyone has a child mentality and everyone has an adult
mentality.
So there's
nothing wrong that you see yourself having a child mentality in some things.
Well, let's back up a little bit, because essentially a child, let me say this. because everyone has an adult mentality and a child mentality, I'm not talking about chronological age adult and chronological age child. Because we've all seen someone who's 70 years old act like a five-year-old.
I saw that last night.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've all seen someone who's a child who's five be generous and compassionate and forgiving as someone should be
at
in
70,
their full adult mentality.
Correct.
Or at 70. Exactly. So I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about behavior. I'm talking about being compassionate, being forgiving, which are two other qualities of the adult. Now, to address your question, when we make a mistake in our relationships, we're usually trying to control someone else. We're trying to, as I said a few minutes ago, child mentality wants to control everyone else as opposed to being in charge of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when we make a mistake in a relationship, we're really trying to control the other person and get them to do something that we want them to do, or using a guilt induction technique or a blaming technique to try and get them to do what we want them to do.
Okay.
And when we... And what happens is in our relationships, when we experience conflict, okay, chances are someone is, the more destabilizing, the more conflict, the more drama, that's the word I'm looking for, the more drama that we have in a relationship, the more one or the other person is involved in their child mentality.
Okay. Would it be true in relationships that, like, I notice in mine, it seems that I kind of have this power and this control, and then all of a sudden I do something that puts me, like, as they say, like in the doghouse, and then it shifts. Is that true in most relationships?
Yes. What happens is in child mentality relationships, there's a process where the power isn't shared, but rather one person has more power than the other. One person is in a one up position, and the other person is in a one down position. In adult relationships, the power is shared between the two parties. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And that's like what I'm always somewhere trying to achieve, but I seem to always gravitate on my worst days back to that one up, one down, like you were saying.
Right, because our child mentality wants to kind of take control and use either a sucking up tactic, a pleasing tactic, if you will, or an intimidation tactic to try and gain power, to try and get something that we want. See, I believe that most people enter in a relationship from their child mentality. We want something from the other, which is basically we want connection. We want to fill the emptiness that we have within us. And in order to do that, we feel that we have to trick the other person into being with us.
Mm.
That's why we use pleasing tactics in the beginning of a relationship, okay, to please them into being with us. Okay? And then as the relationship progresses, when they don't do what we want, we then use intimidation tactics to try and get them to do what we want them to do.
Which traps them away.
Which essentially, exactly, creates conflict and it poisons the relationship.
Oh, no, what I've done wrong all these years.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the vast majority of relationships begin in the child mentality, and you really can't tell if you're in the adult mentality until there is a conflict. Because
when there is
a conflict, you want to put the other person in a one-down position to try and get what you want from them.
In all those early relationships, I've always loved the movies, the places we're going, and then it's just like all of a sudden, one day, like you say, there's that conflict, and all of a sudden, I don't like that restaurant, and you need to know that now.
Exactly. You know? Because in the beginning of a relationship, we're, in our little kid mentality, playing.
Oh, I see what you're saying. And the early relationship is that playfulness, that fresh young love.
That's exactly right.
Everything's nice between you.
Right.
Love everything they do.
All the romantic,
they love everything
gushy.
You live.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's really functioning inside that child.
Most of the time it's functioning inside the child relationship because essentially we're playing. We're going out to dinner, we're putting our best clothes, we're using our best language, we're opening the door for the other person, we're being very polite, and because we're trying to get something from them to fill our emptiness, to fill the hole within us.
So when there's a conflict, that's when we actually see that this was simply an illusion?
It's an illusion, and exactly. And what we do is we take them off that little pedestal that we built up for them
right.
and throw them down to the gutter, again, to try and get what we want from them, which is to change their behavior so that we get what we want from them again.
Now, if this was an adult or mature relationship, it would be a matter of what? What does that look like?
Oh, excellent question. Two people who are adults in a relationship are going to be responsible for themselves and then support the other in supporting themselves. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so when there's a conflict in an adult relationship, two people discuss even-handedly, in a grounded way, integrating their intellectual self, their emotional self, their spiritual self, and their physical self, so that they can integrate all four of those aspects and create a win-win agreement so that both partners or all people involved, because sometimes in adult relationships there's more people involved, not in romantic relationships, hopefully, but in workplace relationships and whatnot. So we're all trying to create, adults try to create a win-win situation, mm-hmm. whereas child mentality relationships try to create a win-lose situation, where the child, the actor, the child in that situation has more power than the other person.
Okay, so let's we now know what a win-win looks like. Two mature adults, we've got two children having this
emotion. Two children having fights.
Having a fight.
Right.
What do you do to end it, to bring yourself back to that mature adult status in the relationship?
Oh, excellent
Is it possible
question.
To make a move, to
oh,
change?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, tell us what.
Absolutely. Essentially, whenever there a conflict exists, okay, let's say you're the adult and you're the recipient of someone's temper tantrum.
Right, okay.
One of the best things to do in that situation is simply ask them something like this. How can I support you? What can I do for you? What result do you want from this situation? Because essentially, when someone's throwing a temper tantrum or something, someone is using an intimidation tactic, they're not getting what they want, but they're using a poor tactic to try and get what they want. So simply asking them, what do you want from this situation, will oftentimes calm them down, okay, and address the actual concern. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Someone who's throwing a temper tantrum is in their emotional aspect, the emotional self, and asking them a question like that will help them go into their intellectual and spiritual self so that they can then try and get their needs met through a different way. And if you tell them, look, I'm on your side, I want to support you, what do you want me to do? How can I support you?
Okay.
What result do you want? That'll help us all, that'll help both parties in that process come to the adult position.
What happens if it doesn't work? Well, you've done that.
Right.
That's, well, how can I help you? How can I support you? And they still want to throw
right.
the tantrum or be
sure.
in the childish. What would be the next step you would do?
Well, the next step, if you're an adult and you've asked those questions, and too often the child mentality just wants to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I've
so
been there before.
Yeah,
that's why I'm asking.
Good question. And what you have to do in that situation is simply say, make a declarative statement. Look, I don't want to fight. I want to solve the problem. I don't want to fight. So I'm going to go over here, and essentially you leave the situation.
Right.
You leave the situation, but tell them that you're going to come back in X amount of time, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, so that you can create a win-win situation. Look, I'm going to go over here. I'll be back in about 15 minutes. And when I come back, I want us both to be able to try and resolve the situation to create a win-win agreement because
okay.
I value who you are and I really want to solve this problem. I don't want to fight. So you make a declarative statement like that, okay? And you with a definitive time when you're going to come back to reinitiate the conversation. Too often people leave, okay, in a huff.
Right.
And not say when they're coming back, and that creates apprehension and feelings of abandonment in the person who's in their child mentality, and that's just going to make the
situation
worse.
And they chase
worse.
After you.
Exactly.
I recognize that scenario. and this scenario, is there a third step if the first two aren't working?
You know, if the first two aren't working,
yeah.
You really have to look at the relationship because how long do you want to be in this relationship where the other person is refusing to engage with you in the adult mentality?
My goodness.
And
yeah.
in that situation, you have to decide, is this relationship worth it? Okay? And sometimes it will be. Sometimes it won't be. I have a personal story of a good friend of mine. I've known him for many, many years, and he and I, about 10 years ago, became embroiled in a conflict, and I was really angry and frustrated, and I didn't talk to him for about 2 weeks. And that was a long time for us at that time. And I was speaking to another mutual friend of ours, and she said to me, you know, that's just the way he is. Okay?
Well,
he is that way, and you're not going to change him. And she was referencing the specific conflict that we had. And she told me, he is that way, you're not going to change him. So you either accept who he is because you value the relationship and you accept this flaw in his being at that time, or you just move on. Okay? Mm-hmm. And move on to a different relationship. At that point, I chose to continue the relationship, you know, and just made, I changed myself instead of trying to change him.
In your counseling, do you usually work more with couples or with individuals who come in and then try to bring the other person in the relationship or the other people in the relationship into, let's say, a session?
I essentially work within most scenarios. I've worked with couples, gay, straight couples. I've worked with people who are in a relationship and trying to change the relationship for the better, where the other partner doesn't want to come in, and I've worked with people who are single, who are looking for a relationship, and just, you know, are struggling with, you know, men being stupid and women being crazy, as it were.
That reminds me of a website that you have here.
Men are stupid, women are crazy. Right. Before we close, give us your website and your contact information.
Well, I have a seminar that I teach men and women how to better understand each other, and it's called, the seminar is called Men Are Stupid, Women Are Crazy, and my website is menarestupidwomenarecrazy.com. And I can be reached at Josue, that's Josue, at clear-solutions.biz. That's B-I-Z. And I have these booklets on my website and more information about me and my seminars.
Contacted directly over phone at 713-724-1821.
That's correct.
And I want to thank you for coming. This was interesting again for your second. I hope you'll come back again because there's more I want to ask, and we just never seem to have enough time.
I'm just finding out a bunch about me.
This is Jennifer Renee.
This is Brian with an I.
Raise money out there. Donations for everyone. Call us at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738.
Or 713-526-KPFT.
Or 713-JAM-KPFT.
Let's go to the lobby and see what's going on.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, Matt,
howdy,
how are you doing?
Doing good out here. Had a couple of calls.
Fantastic.
I'd like to thank Cindy and Bob for calling up and donating.
Thank you, Cindy, and thank you, Bob. We appreciate that.
Yes, we do.
But boy, we sure can have that phone ring some more, huh?
Yes, we do. We do need the phones to ring, and so we can make our goal.
Maybe if I just say one more time, 713-526-KPFT. Every dollar counts, keeping good programming going on here at KPFT. Queer Voices needs your support, you know?
Yes.
If you're just turning on the radio to KPFT and you don't normally listen to Queer Voices, I'm sure there's some other programming here on this station that, you know, needs your support as well. You know, it's our fun drive, and we really need all the help we can get.
Or if you're a first-time listener to the station and is wondering what the heck is up, guess what?
You know, and you could even be a listener like me, somebody who listened for 2-3 years, and all of a sudden, you know, one day that guilt just got in me. And I was just like, you know, I'm clocking, you know, 40 hours a week listening to KPFT, and, you know, and I haven't sent in a nickel. And you know what? I really started feeling much better about myself when I started sending in some money.
And it's like most people, they listen for like 20, 30 years, never sent in a dime, and then the guilt sets in, and they call.
Yeah, you know, and it's great. I mean, you know, without your support, I mean, we're not on the air.
Right.
It's dead air, you know, mm-hmm. And this is the only radio station in Houston that sits around with, you know, over 90% of listener support funding.
Mm-hmm. And we're the only station that's been on the air for, what, 38 years?
38 years, yeah.
March of 1970.
Yeah. You know, and we're definitely the only station, GLBT, you know, station that has GLBT programming.
Not only one GLBT, but two.
That's right. We also have Queer Music Heritage.
And After Hours.
Oh, and After Hours, yeah.
Late Night Saturdays between 1 and 4 a.m.
That's right. Sir Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of programming out there for GLBT people, but also from every interest that you might have. The programming is here on KPFT. I mean, you won't hear the kind of stuff on other stations that you hear here because we're supported by you. We're supported by our local community. Your contributions make it possible for us to be on the air and to give you the programming that we do. You know, Queer Voices is a special program, has been on the air for many, many years in various incarnations, but for many years as Queer Voices. It's a lot of hard work. We all do it as volunteers, but we do it because we love it. We do it because we know you love us. You care about us. And you know, we'd appreciate if you'd pick up the phone and dial 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
Or if you're numerically challenged, like most people in Houston, it's 713-JAM-KPFT.
You know, and you don't need to be at a landline to do it. You could be driving in your car right now listening. You know, you might even want to pull over and get that cell phone out and just dial those numbers, 713-526-KPFT.
Yeah, just pull off in the parking lot safely and when you make that call.
You know, and you think that, oh, it's going to take a whole bunch of time. They're going to do this and that. You know, 90 seconds, we get all the information that we need from you. You know, and anything you can send, you know, counts. You know, $35 gets you a general membership. You know, $65, we start having gifts for you. You know, I mean, I got a lovely peace T-shirt. You know, and it's wonderful. You know, every time I'm wearing that, I'm showing everybody out there that I support listener sponsored radio.
Or if you are a college student or on a fixed income, you can donate at the $25 level and be a member.
That's right. Everything counts. Every bit counts. You know, if you had $5, you know, we need every bit that we can get. That's for sure.
And you can also go to kpft.org and donate on our little PayPal system that we have there.
That's right. You know, the fantastic plastic. Mm-hmm. You know, that definitely works. Looking for pound notes, loose change, bad checks, anything. Not bad checks, though.
Nah, we don't want bad checks.
Come on. That's what you get really in trouble for.
Yes.
We don't want that. We want our listeners to please call in and donate. Make it possible for us to continue with our show as well as all the wonderful shows that are on KPFT. There's lots of music, lots of talk, lots of entertainment. I love the show on computers and technology.
Tech Bytes?
Yes, I love that.
Jay
I
Lee
learned so much. And I realized, of course, I learned so much, I feel so much so stupid.
Yeah, you know,
after I listen to them for a while.
I wake up on Saturday mornings and look forward to hearing PT's Cajun Bandstand. You know, and Spare Change, and, you know, all those programs. Such great program that you get here at KPFT. You know, it's listener-sponsored. You know, your input counts. You know, the program then that we have is directly, you know, it's affected by your listener support. You know, when you're calling in and you're sending and making a pledge to Queer Voices, you're telling us that you want to hear Queer Voices and have it continue on this station. You know, so we need your support. We really do.
And if you'd like to, you can even walk up to the station and make a donation.
You can walk up to the station, and we might even let you answer a phone. But
yep.
You know, so we really appreciate that. So please make that phone ring, 713-526-5738. You know, 713-526-KPFT.
713-JAM-KPFT.
Come on, let's all of you out there take some time. If you were listening, you heard some very good. You got David Elliott from Washington, D.C., and he did the Beltway and Beyond report. And then we just had Josue Maimi, a professional counselor, talking on relationships and some incredible information around relationships. I hope you were listening carefully. I learned a lot from what he said in that short time. It's that 15 minutes seemed to speed by too quickly.
Went by real quick. You know, we're going to have to get him back in here.
I talked to him about that. This is his second visit to us, and it just seems like we don't have enough time to cover everything. So he said he'd be back.
That's fantastic.
If you're interested in such things and want to get it, please call us at 713-526-5738.
Okay, now it's time to go to This Way Out.
I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 1st, 2008. In Australia, Sydney celebrated the 30th annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade on March 1st with the usual flamboyant floats and marching entries and record crowds. It was led by the 78ers, activists who'd participated in what was then a first-ever LGBT street party in 1978 that police violently broke up. This year, more than 10,000 marchers and 150 floats paraded through central Sydney while a crowd estimated at about 300,000 waving rainbow flags cheered them on. A contingent from the Australian Defence Force, which lifted its ban on openly lesbi-gay service members in 1992, marched for the first time, as did a group of about 100 Christian clerics known as the 100 Revs, who've said that LGBT people deserve an apology for the unchristian way they've been treated by their religious institutions. Gay and lesbian Mardi Gras has become one of the largest queer pride events in the world, generating millions in tourism revenue. Air New Zealand even offered a special pink flight from San Francisco to Sydney for the festivities.
Meanwhile, representatives from lesbian groups across Africa are calling for governments on their continent to end homophobia and repeal laws against homosexual acts. Up to 100 people are reportedly taking part in a week-long conference in the Mozambique capital of Maputo, organized by the Coalition of African Lesbians. Women from 14 African nations gathered in Namibia in August 2004 to establish that group. Homosexuality is outlawed in 38 countries in Africa. And while South Africa has some of the world's most progressive queer rights laws, including same-gender marriage, a spokesperson for this week's conference said that South African society doesn't always reflect the laws of the land. Fikile Vilakazi told reporters that gays and lesbians continue to be threatened, detained, and even murdered there.
Same-gender marriage is also legal in Spain, Belgium, Canada, the Netherlands, and the U.S. state of Massachusetts. But Spain's opposition, Partido Popular, is threatening to overturn the mostly Roman Catholic country's 2005 legalization of same-gender marriage if it wins the March 9th national elections. Queer advocates picketed the Partido Popular headquarters in mid-February, charging that the party has a desire to turn back the clock. They carried signs saying, "We are for a secular state," and "No to religious dictatorship."
The Malta gay rights movement this week submitted a petition to the ruling Nationalist Party demanding queer equality, according to a report in the Times of Malta. The petition, with 1,084 signatures, asked for formal legal recognition of same-gender couples, anti-discrimination protections based on sexual orientation and gender expression in the delivery of goods and services, a clear strategy to fight homophobic and transphobic bullying in schools, and the inclusion of gender reassignment surgery and hormone therapy for transgender persons as part of public health services. Education Minister Luis Galea and Nationalist Party General Secretary Joe Saliba responded to the petition, first saying that the party's definition of marriage was strictly that of a union between a man and a woman, but that the Nationalists were committed to addressing the rights of cohabiting couples, whether heterosexual or same gender. They also said that their party favored anti-discrimination legislation in the provision of goods and services, and that they would be willing to support a European Union directive to that effect. They also acknowledged the need for some form of government support for transgender people. A Malta gay rights movement spokesperson told the Times of Malta that the group hopes that this will result in concrete policy actions should the Nationalist Party be re-elected.
And at least 5 gay men are seeking election to parliament in Nepal. Sunil Pant, founder of the country's LGBT advocacy group Blue Diamond Society and one of the candidates, told the Reuters news service that this is a very symbolic approach to tell all Nepalis that we have equal rights. All 5 gay candidates are members of the Nepal Communist Party, a junior partner in the coalition government. Voters go to the polls on April 10th to elect a new 601-seat legislature. It will be the country's first general election since 1999. Homosexual acts are punishable in Hindu-majority Nepal by up to 2 years in prison. members of the Himalayan Nation's LGBT community are arbitrarily arrested, held without a hearing, and beaten and tortured by prison guards. Nepal's Supreme Court ruled in December that the government must create new laws to protect sexual minority rights and change those that discriminate. The government has thus far not acted on the court's directive.
Human Rights Watch and the Moroccan Human Rights Association this week petitioned that government to repeal a law that outlaws consensual same-gender sex. The two groups also urged Morocco to release six men currently in jail under Article 489 of the country's penal code, which mandates prison terms for persons who commit lewd or unnatural acts with an individual of the same sex. Police arrested the men in November after a video of a private event described by local media as a gay wedding circulated on the internet. Prosecutors failed to submit any evidence at the trial that the defendants had violated Article 489, and despite each man's not guilty plea, a court in Kassar el-Kabir sentenced each of them to between 4 and 10 months in prison. An appellate court in Tangier upheld the convictions but reduced their sentences. Joe Stork, director of Human Rights Watch's Middle East and North Africa division, said in the press release that this trial shows how an unjust law can be used to violate the basic right to privacy and fuel social prejudice.
In other news, the future Queen of the Netherlands will attend an LGBT rights conference organized by the Dutch Gay Federation, becoming the first royal in the world to personally appear at such a gathering. A spokesperson for the royal family announced this week that Princess Maxima will address the conference being held in four major cities: Amsterdam, Rotterdam, The Hague, and Utrecht. She's the Argentine-born wife of Crown Prince Willem-Alexander, the heir to the Dutch throne. The conference will discuss the exclusion of LGBT people in society. The royal spokesperson said that the princess will sign an accord at the end of the conference calling for the full acceptance of gay people in the Netherlands. Organizer Frank van Dalen told reporters that this will be a historically significant royal presence. This is what we have been hoping for a very long time. The announcement has been criticized by a far-right political party, the Dutch Lutheran Church, and Islamic groups. Muslims are a growing presence in the country. In 2001, the Netherlands became the world's first country to enact marriage equality, but there's been an alarming increase in homophobic attacks there in recent times. Police in Amsterdam reported a 50% increase in such violent crimes last year, often perpetrated by immigrant youth.
In what may be the first ruling of its kind in the U.S., a New York City judge decided this week that the determination by the state's highest court that there's no constitutional right to same-gender marriage doesn't apply to divorce. The ruling by Supreme Court Justice Laura Drager allows a Manhattan woman who married her lesbian partner in Canada in 2004 to sue for divorce and child custody. Beth R. is seeking the divorce and joint custody of Donna M.'s two children. The women are only identified that way because the children are minors. Donna M. argued that the divorce petition should be dismissed because New York State doesn't recognize same-gender marriage. But Drager found that out-of-state same-sex marriages are properly recognized under our law. In another case last month, the appellate division of the state Supreme Court arrived at the same conclusion. It reversed a lower court ruling that Monroe Community College in Rochester didn't have to extend health benefits to an employee's lesbian partner, even though the couple had legally married in Canada. Both cases will likely be heard by the New York Court of Appeals, the state's highest court. That court's ruling last year against same-gender marriage said it was up to the legislature to enact such a law. The democratically controlled New York State Assembly subsequently passed marriage equality legislation, but the Republican-led state Senate has refused to take up the bill.
And finally, an update to our late-breaking report last week about February 24th's 80th Annual Academy Awards. A host of stars turned out for the traditional Oscar night party in support of the Elton John AIDS Foundation. The annual gala, hosted by the openly gay pop star and his partner David Furnish, featured performances by Mary J. Blige, Jack Shears of Scissor Sisters, and Sir Elton himself. It was one of the night's most attended parties and raised a record-breaking $5.1 million. Since its establishment in 1992, the Elton John AIDS Foundation has raised more than $125 million to support HIV/AIDS prevention and service programs in 55 countries.
And as we reported last week, Freeheld, about a terminally ill lesbian New Jersey police lieutenant's fight to have her domestic partner inherit her pension, won the Best Documentary Short Subject Oscar. But you wouldn't know that Scott Rudin, co-producer of the Best Picture-winning No Country for Old Men, was a gay man if you read the original transcript of the event posted on the official Oscars website. The last part of his acceptance speech was curiously missing.
This is also from my partner, John Barlow. Without you, honey, this would be hardware. Thank you so much. Thank you.
The transcript was eventually updated to include those sentiments, but as pundit Dana Stevens wrote on Slate.com, I guess being publicly gay at the Oscars is still no country for old men.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 1st, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Erica Springer.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is Jack and Jennifer Renee, and we have on the line right now Mark Walsh, who's the GLBT representative from the Clinton campaign. Are you there?
I am. Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Sorry about all the phone difficulties, but we've got you on.
I'm so glad we finally found a landline. So I'm actually here in Dallas tonight. I'm over at Station 4. We have Sophie B. Hawkins and Robert Gant from Queer as Folk and Rob Reiner, who you may have known, who did American President. They're here to get out the LGBT vote here in Dallas for Hillary. So we're thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to be with you on the phone.
Right, and you should know it's not always as cold in Texas.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm a Bostonian, so I'm used to the cold weather, but not in Dallas. I kind of expected we'd have warm weather.
Well, all for early voting, we had fabulous weather in Texas.
I know, and I hear it's going to be nice tomorrow.
Yes, it'll be a little chilly in the morning, but it will be sunny, so that nothing to hold anybody back from coming out.
Well, and I would urge everybody, no matter who you're supporting, but especially if you're supporting Hillary Clinton, to turn out to vote tomorrow. And if you've early voted, to make sure you caucus. I know caucuses have been around for a long time in Texas, but most folks are not real familiar with them. But it's important that people turn out, and quite frankly, it's important that LGBT Texans turn out so that our community is an important part of the election that happens tomorrow.
Well, Mark, let's start it off. Tell everybody that's listening why, as an LGBT person, you need to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, you know, for seven long years, this administration, the Bush administration's really tried to divide our country, really seeing only people that matter to them. And no community has been more invisible to this administration than the LGBT community. Hillary Clinton will be a president who's fully committed to the fair and equal treatment of LGBT Americans. And quite frankly, I think her record shows that she'll do that. And she's got a record of accomplishment as First Lady, as a United States Senator, and as a candidate for president that I think she'll has shown that she's going to be committed to our fair and equal treatment and will be a great president on our issues.
I know she has a lot of number of key issues that she that deal with the GLBT community. And why don't you speak to them? I know she's a supporter of INDA.
Well, Hillary is not only a supporter but a co-sponsor of ENDA, and I would say a fully inclusive ENDA. She's also a co-sponsor of the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, the Domestic Partner Benefits Act, which would grant same-sex partners equal benefits if they're a federal employee, as they are offered to straight couples. She's also author of the Early Treatment for HIV Act. And I think certainly her conduct in this campaign shows that the gay and lesbian and transgender bisexual community is an important part of the coalition that she's trying to build. Quite frankly, within a month of announcing the campaign, she hired me, and not just the me, but the fact that she hired a director of LGBT outreach, showed that we were an important part of the coalition that she's trying to build as president. As I think an important symbol of the inclusion of our community is the fact that as First Lady, as a senator, and quite frankly last week she made news that she said she would be the first U.S. president to march in Gay Pride, and I think that shows a respect for our community that's unprecedented.
Yeah, I definitely don't think John McCain will be marching.
I do not. I do not. I think the other thing I'd like to point out is I think the clear distinction with Hillary Clinton is she's been speaking to our community loudly and clearly throughout this campaign. She's been going to LGBT audiences directly, speaking to them. She's been talking to our gay and lesbian newspapers. She was in The Advocate back in September. She spoke to the Dallas Voice not 3 days ago. She spoke in Ohio to the papers up there, and I think that's an important distinction here is that she's been speaking loudly and clearly and taking the hard questions from our media leaders, and I think that is a real distinction in this race.
Well, I know one of the important issues concerning our community is that don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Where does she stand on that, and what would she do as president?
Well, Hillary is a strong opponent to the don't ask, don't tell policy, and she did that, quite frankly, as First Lady, and that's an important stance that we need to get rid of, don't ask, don't tell. Now, her experience that she's had as a member of the Armed Services Committee, she has built relationships with members of the military, and that's why she's been endorsed by people like General Wesley Clark and General John Shalakashvili. And I think she'll use those relationships to really build some momentum in the military to be able to change don't ask, don't tell. You know, she's created a national steering committee of LGBT Americans, and several of those members are former members of the military. San Antonio's own Eric Alva, who was the first Marine injured in Iraq, who's a strong proponent of getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's endorsed Hillary as an important part of our steering committee. So I think that she's the president who has the experience and the relationships to really go through the hard work of changing the minds of first the military and then the U.S. Congress to really get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Do you have any insight on how the military, we see what's in public about it, but behind the scenes, is the military, is there any inside information you might be able to give us on how the military feels about it if that is repealed?
Well, I think what you're seeing, it's not so much inside information, but really you're seeing a change of attitude in some of the military leadership. John Shalakashvili, for example, former Joint Chiefs of Staff, is saying it's time that we relook at that policy. And so I think that's an indication that the military is very open to thinking about that change. You know, there's been polls that have been done that shows that rank and file military, especially the lower ranks in the military, are not opposed to serving openly with gay people. And I think that that's a change. And we've seen that change over the past several, almost a decade or so that we've had the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy into place. So there is an attitude change. I don't know that it's a inside knowledge other than, you know, I think clearly the relationships that Hillary has built will help her sit down and have those strong and hard conversations about how we need to change that.
Oh, absolutely. Now, another one that we always run into, especially in our community, is about same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Senator Clinton stand on that?
Well, Senator Clinton, as all the candidates in the race, is not in favor of same-sex marriage, but she speaks strongly about civil unions and creating full equality of benefits. As you probably know, there's over 1,148, I think the number is, federal benefits that same-sex couples are denied. And Hillary is committed to changing those laws, whether it's tax laws, whether it's whatever the laws, federal laws have to be, to change those federal laws so that same-sex couples are on equal footing with their straight counterparts.
Now, I know that part of that, that's the ban that Congress put in, the DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and that's been a black eye to our community, but there's some reasoning behind it. Can you tell us about Senator Clinton's stand on that?
Well, Senator Clinton's view is there's several sections of DOMA, and she is for getting rid of Section 3 of DOMA, which denies federal benefits of same-sex to same-sex couples, and her view is if marriage is left to the states and states decide, like Massachusetts has, my home state, that that same-sex couples should be married, then the federal government should not be denying federal benefits to those couples. So she's a strong believer that we need to change Section 3 of DOMA and get rid of it so that if a state chooses to provide marriage or have marriage between same-sex couples, that those full availability of benefits.
Okay, well, so I understand, and everyone else out here, because not all of us, we just know the overall picture of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, that was the pesky Republicans, those little rabbits, causing problems for our community. But isn't there something about recognizing marriage or same-sex coupling in other states? Is that ban still on?
That's Section 2 of DOMA, and that section says that states don't need to recognize marriages in other states. That section, quite frankly, was very, very instrumental. Let me back up a second. In 2006, Senator Clinton was instrumental in helping, working with the LGBT group.
It can be a mouthful, can't it?
To develop a smart strategy to defeat the Federal Marriage Amendment. She worked hard and long to get rid of to defeat the Federal Marriage Amendment. And in her view, having Section 2 in place, which said that states don't have to recognize that, helped her convince some of the more conservative members of Congress that they don't, that a Federal Marriage Amendment was not necessary. It was, in her view, was something that was instrumental in helping us defeat that.
Well, I know that as president, the president of the United States has a great deal of power as far as the executive. They can do some things by executive order. Is there something that Senator Clinton would do as president as far as that was concerned to further the GLBT protections within the administration?
Well, wherever she can change the law or change it by executive order, she's certainly committed to providing full equality of benefits. Certain things we need to change the laws passed by Congress to make that happen, but wherever she'd be able to do it by executive order, she's fully supportive of making that happen.
Would that be something as far as employment within the federal government?
Yeah, absolutely. So that there would be full, you know, the same employment rights for LGBT Americans, that if we can change it by executive order, then we absolutely would do that.
Okay. All right. That's one of the things that, you know, we've been waiting on INDA forever, but if there's some way that a president who is sympathetic to GLBT issues could actually do it on the, her husband did, Bill, during his when Don't Ask, Don't Tell went in.
Well, but you know something, you can do things by executive order with regard to federal employees, but what ENDA would do is protect employees, people from across this country in private employment, and that's really what we need, a president that's going to be fully committed to make that happen.
Absolutely. There were a couple of other things that I wanted to, about her health care bill, her health care, universal health care. Would you explain that? I hear so much bad information on TV and radio, especially right-wing radio. You would think that the Army's coming to round up all the doctors if you listen to those wackos. Well, tell us what her program is.
Well, I think this is a clear distinction between the two candidates for president on the Democratic side. Is Hillary's plan is one for universal health care and requires coverage by everybody, so that we have a plan that will cover everyone. Senator Obama's plan doesn't do that, does not cover everyone, does not require that people get health insurance. That's a key difference in their plans. I think that, you know, certainly I want to make this clear that it is not a government plan, that there's only the government plan, but there would be a choices plan, so that folks that are perfectly happy with their insurance would be able to keep their insurance. People that wanted to, it would also make accessible to folks the congressional plan that's available now, so that everybody would have a choice of the plan they were picking, but everybody required to have care.
Now, what I just heard from you is nothing like I've heard the media spewing out over the last 3 or 4 months about that. I did not understand clearly that you actually had a choice until you just explained that to me. So that word needs to get out more so.
Well, and I would urge folks, I don't pretend to be a healthcare expert, but I would urge folks to go to HillaryClinton.com and read in detail what her plan is about, because I think it's a comprehensive plan that will really get us in the direction of universal health care.
Now, does everybody have to carry health care, have to have insurance of some kind?
Under Hillary Clinton's plan, everybody would be required to have health insurance. And the reason for that is, in order to actually have a plan that can reduce costs, it requires that everyone have health insurance. And certainly we need mechanisms whereby people can have subsidized if their income's at to a certain level. But if you don't require everyone to have health insurance, then some folks will choose not to get that. And what will happen is that those folks will still get in accidents, will still get sick, and somebody's going to have to pay for that care. And what's going to happen is all those of us who are paid for our insurance are ultimately going to have to pay for the care that those folks are going to require. So we're never going to experience the kind of cost savings that we need by requiring everybody to have care.
Okay, I understand that. How does that affect, because right now I know that our own hospital district has millions that have to go out to people who don't have insurance, which is part of the reason it exists, but also people coming across the border who are illegal coming for our medical care and then going back. Are there any safeguards in our plan, or is it too early to define something like that?
You know, I think it's too early, and I don't want to pretend to be the healthcare expert, so I appreciate your question, and I should tell you that healthcare, I've been debating in several debates in LGBT communities, and healthcare seems to be the issue that continually comes up, and I think it's an important debate that we need to have, and I certainly would urge folks to go to our website, look at the plan specifically, and it may address the issues that you're concerned about.
All right, why don't you give us that website?
Sure, it's www.hillaryclinton.com.
Is there anything at this moment, we got just about 30 seconds left, that you want to get out to and say right now?
Well, I wanted to say that, you know, we are thrilled to be here in Texas. We're working very hard. We're thrilled to be working hard in Houston, to have the endorsement of the Stonewall Democrats of Houston. We're thrilled to have the endorsement of Niece Parker, your city controller, Sue Lovell, your city councilor. I'm feeling great about tomorrow. I think we have got a real opportunity, and Texas will be the road to victory for Hillary Clinton. So we're being thrilled. She's thrilled to have our community, the LGBT community, BT community, to be an important part of her coalition. So get out there and vote Texas.
All right. Thank you, Mark Walsh, GLBT representative from the Hillary Clinton campaign. Thank you very much. This is Queer Voices.
And Jennifer, I just wanted to mention that KPFT does not endorse any political candidate for any particular political office.
Absolutely.
And part of the reason for that is because KPFT is a nonprofit organization. And so as a result, we're going to try to provide a kind of a balanced approach here. We had the spokesman on for Hillary, and coming up next, as we tickle the electrons, we're going to get Tobias Wolf, who is a GLBT representative from the Obama campaign, and you're going to get a chance to talk with him. And in the meantime, I'd like to encourage everyone to make a pledge call, 713-526-5738. And by the way, we're up to $275.
That's a really good start. And
we have a donation here.
We have a thank you here, Anthony, and he is with Independent Insurance, which is great, and we encourage everybody to become part of our family, our sometimes dysfunctional family, but our family nevertheless. We're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Okay, this is Jennifer Renee, and we have on our phone Tobias Wolf, who is the GLBT representative from the Senator Barack Obama campaign. Are you there with us?
I sure am. It's great to talk to you, Jennifer.
Great.
Again.
We've talked to you a lot. You've been hanging around Houston. You must like it here.
Well, you know, I've come to learn that the more time you spend in Texas, the more you come to like it.
Well, you're welcome to move down here. You're where? From Philadelphia? No, where are you from?
Yes. Yep, I'm living in Philadelphia, yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, why is it that the GLBT listeners that are here listening to us tonight and listening to you, tell us why we should go out and vote for Senator Obama?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing that I'll say for your listeners is that you should trust the good folks at the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, who we were very proud to receive the endorsement of the organization. It was frankly one of the highlights of the political year for me and my work on the campaign. And I think the endorsement came because the folks at the caucus saw what Barack has been doing on GLBT rights for his entire career and throughout this campaign, and that is that he's not only been fighting for our equal rights and fighting for those rights both in the Illinois State Senate and in the United States Senate, but he's been doing something which is really unprecedented in this campaign, which is that he's been bringing the message of LGBT equality to a general audience and even to skeptical audiences. And, you know, what we've learned so far is that in order to achieve real and meaningful change for LGBT Americans at the national level, the old politics don't work so well because we haven't yet seen federal civil rights legislation enacted for us at the national level. And what Barack has been doing for his entire career and will do for LGBT Americans in the White House is bringing folks to the table who don't yet agree on all the important issues and showing the kind of moral leadership that can really forge a consensus and build a new political coalition. And he started that work already in the campaign by talking about LGBT equality to general audiences, to thousands and tens of thousands of people in auditoriums from Texas to South Carolina to Georgia to Colorado and California. And it's really the most amazing visibility that our community has ever had in a presidential election.
I know that he's been doing. Where has he been speaking that was, when you say common audience, where would this be?
Well, gosh, I'll give you a couple of examples. I mean, there's literally dozens. Probably the most dramatic example came in Georgia in January. On the evening of Martin Luther King Day, about 6 days before the South Carolina primary, which of course was one of the key early primaries in the election, Senator Obama was giving an address from the stage of the Ebenezer Baptist Church, which is the church in Atlanta where Dr. King himself used to preach. And he gave a really extraordinary address about the issue of building community and what it really means to build community. And part of what he talked about in that address was the need for every community, including the community that he was addressing, which was a Black Baptist audience, to be honest with themselves about the ways in which they have more work to do in examining the prejudices and the imperfections that sometimes exist within their own groups. And he very specifically said, if we are honest with ourselves, we will acknowledge that we in Black America have not always been as open to our gay brothers and sisters as we should be, and we have scorned them instead of embracing them as full members of our community. And he called out anti-Semitism, and he called out, you know, the various challenges that that we've had in achieving that kind of full, really, you know, sort of broad community in this nation. And to do that, you know, with that audience on that stage 6 days before the single most important primary at that moment in a conservative, in many ways, socially conservative state of South Carolina, was really an act of great political courage. And obviously it paid off because he did great in South Carolina.
Now, one of the key pieces of legislation currently in Congress is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Yes.
And where does the senator stand on the act?
Well, you know, the senator has been a very strong ally of the LGBT community. And, of course, that doesn't just mean gay and lesbian and bisexual folks. It means transgender folks as well. And in the state of Illinois, Senator Obama co-sponsored a fully inclusive anti-discrimination law that became enacted as the Illinois Human Rights Act. And it prohibited discrimination both on the basis of sexual orientation and on the basis of gender identity. And in the United States Senate, he's been a very public and conspicuous supporter of a fully inclusive bill, and actually made a point of reiterating his support for a fully inclusive bill right around the time that the Senate first started considering what it was going to do after the House passed its compromise bill.
Okay, I'm going right along with that. We talk about don't ask, don't tell. I mean, we're talking about equality. What about the what is the senator's position on don't ask, don't tell in the military?
You know, he's offered one of the strongest and most well thought out statements on how we get rid of don't ask, don't tell. I mean, I should answer your question very directly. He's a very strong proponent of getting rid of don't ask, don't tell. And what getting rid of don't ask, don't tell means is not just repealing that terrible statute, which was enacted back in 1993 during the Clinton presidency, and not just enacting in its place the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, which is the bill pending in the House right now, which would put in place a formal policy of non-discrimination, which Senator Obama has endorsed. But it's also about, getting all of the various people who are going to be key to implementing that change to come to the table and to be involved and invested in the process. And that means members of the Senate Armed Services Committee and the counterpart committee in the House, and it means military leaders, because in order to successfully implement a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we need military leaders to be partners in implementing anti-discrimination and anti-harassment policies. You know, harassment of LGBT members of the armed forces is one of the most serious problems that we've experienced under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We need to have protocols that will tell us how we're going to address situations when there is discrimination between service members, or even between a service member and her commander, for example. And in order to make that work, we need folks in the military to be to be buying in and to be active partners in making this happen. And, you know, the landscape has changed so much over the last decade and a half, and the United States now lags way behind on the world stage on this issue. All of our NATO allies, with the exception of Turkey, many other countries around the world, from South Africa to Israel to Canada, have gotten rid of their anti-gay military policies without any demonstrable problem in military performance or readiness. And it's time for the United States to stop making excuses and to make it clear that we can do the same thing.
Okay, well, look, another issue that's always important and has been important for many years with our community is same-sex marriage.
Sure.
And the passage of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. What is the senator's position on that?
The senator has been calling for the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act for some years now. In fact, he made a point of going on record when he was a candidate for the U.S. Senate. He gave an interview to the Windy City Times, which is one of the gay newspapers in Chicago. And he went on record at that point and said, look, I'm in favor of a repeal. I will vote to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act if I'm elected to the U.S. Senate. And he's in favor of, I should make a point of mentioning, a complete repeal of that statute. One of the very important policy differences on LGBT issues between Senator Obama and Senator Clinton is that Senator Clinton, unfortunately, has not been willing to support a complete repeal of DOMA. She has been willing to support a repeal of part of the statute, the part that deals with federal rights and benefits, and that's certainly important. But the part of the statute that deals with interstate relations and how our relationships get treated as we travel around the country, that part of that discriminatory statute she says that she wants to keep in place. And Senator Obama has been very clear that he wants to get rid of the entire statute, lock, stock, and barrel.
Okay, another issue that we've been hearing about in the press and all is about Senator Obama's health care plan.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, I keep listening to the different talking heads and all, and I am thoroughly confused. Why don't you straighten me out and tell how it affects our GLBT community?
Well, let me say a couple of words about that, and I need to admit to you up front that healthcare policy is not something that I'm a really deep expert on. But I can tell you this, that and of course we've been hearing about this for the entire campaign, that the healthcare plans that Senator Obama has put forward, that Senator Clinton has put forward, and that Senator Edwards put forward early in the campaign as well, in most respects are very much the same, and their goal is to reduce costs and to reduce waste and to promote the broadest coverage possible. And the point of difference between the policies, I guess, comes with the question when it comes to the folks at the margins, the folks who are going to be hard to reach where insurance is concerned, what's the best approach to getting those folks covered? And there's two basic ways to answer that question. And the first way is to say, well, we're going to reduce costs, and we're going to make insurance as affordable as possible for those folks and conduct outreach and otherwise, you know, pursue strategies to make sure that as many of them sign up as possible. And then if it turns out that there are some folks who are still not covered, then we'll figure out what we need to do to get them covered. The other way to approach it is to say we're going to have a mandate, and the mandate is going to force everybody to purchase insurance right away. And if they don't, then they're going to get penalized, and the penalties are going to be very stiff, and they'll be enforced through the IRS and taxes or through garnishment of wages or some other mechanism. And, you know, both of these approaches are imperfect. And the question is, which is better as a matter of public policy? Is it better to focus first on getting costs down so that folks can afford to purchase insurance? Or is it better to impose a mandate and force everybody to purchase the insurance and then penalize them if they can't? And what Senator Obama has said, and of course this is an issue that is as important to LGBT folks as it is to anybody else, is that it doesn't make sense to start off with a mandate, because if you start off with a mandate, what's going to wind up happening is that there are going to be folks who can't afford to buy insurance, and you're going to be penalizing them, and they're going to be worse off than they were before. And his priority is to get costs down and to get as many people into the system as possible, and then to figure out what you have to do in stage two to ensure that everybody else is covered as well.
Okay, changing subjects real quickly, and that has to do with the power of the presidency.
Yes.
You know, while we're waiting for Congress to get around to passing a Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which covers the entire United States and the business community and all, within the government itself, the president can use executive order to sort of get government employees and government institutions to, through executive order, to adhere to a non-discrimination policy which includes sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression.
That's
would,
right.
Would the senator be willing to do so?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, you know, I should mention for starters that it's a perhaps sounds like a small point, but an important one, that Senator Obama's campaign has an anti-discrimination policy which covers both sexual orientation and gender identity. And he has gone on record as saying that he will use the power of the presidency to enforce the principles of non-discrimination in all those areas where the president has responsibility. And that means in areas of federal employees and also federal contractors, folks who do business with the United States government.
Now, I caught that last part. He would go as far as ordering, where possible, the contractors and suppliers to the federal government to adhere to it also?
Yeah, I mean, he has gone on record as saying that that is the principle that he wants to implement. Now, you know, any time that you implement a policy like that, you know, you have to make sure you do it right. And so, you know, like any other important federal...
Jamaican refugee, but first, the American tale of a true internationalist. That's also a fitting salute to Women's History Month.
Jane Addams, social work pioneer and peace activist, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Jane Addams was born in Illinois in 1860. Although from an upper-class family, she became known for her compassionate service to the poor. In the 1880s, she opened the Hull House in poverty-stricken Chicago, where Addams pioneered the concept of the independent woman, incorporating leadership training. Addams believed the dominant male values of her time contributed to poverty, urban blight, and war, and believed the duty of women was to propose different models for living. Her belief that war was the supreme social evil garnered her the Nobel Peace Prize in 1931. Addams' closest companion was Mary Rosette Smith, who championed the work at the Hull House. Addams considered this 40-year relationship nothing short of a marriage. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mary Gay Hutcherson.
So, you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news reports, being introduced to terrific new music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new hit movie even before the buzz begins. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can have our programs on CD or audio cassette delivered right into your mailbox, and for much less than the cost of a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, just log on to thiswayout.org or email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
As Gareth Henry says himself, being a leader of JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, is a high-risk job. The risk became so high that Gareth had to escape the official and unofficial threats to his life and leave the country. Last time on This Way Out, only a few weeks after arriving in Toronto, he talked with correspondent Heather Kitching about why he sought asylum in Canada with the assistance of the LGBT organization EGAL. As their conversation continues, Gareth shares his remarkable story of survival and commitment.
I left my parents' house, my mother's house, when I was 15 years old because I could not deal with the violence in my community that was geared towards me. And when I decided on leaving home, they weren't 100% supportive. But it was when a gay man was beaten in the town. That's when they got really afraid and, you know, agreed that I should leave. And I left and went to the city and lived with my aunt. And, you know, I really thought then that I would have been in a different space where nobody knows me and everything would have been okay. But, you know, that was short-lived. And over time, people started to say things, and the same thing started to happen like used to happen when I was back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's my just mere chance or by luck I came across one gay man while I was working, and he introduced me to a larger group of gay men who met on a regular basis, which was with the focus of personal development and HIV/AIDS education and awareness. And that's how I got involved with the gay community in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got excited about, you know, what was happening and wanted to become more involved in the process. And it was just around the same time when JFLAG was being formed. And so I offered to volunteer with JFLAG because I was intrigued by, you know, what they were about, you know, their mission, their vision, what is it that they want to do for the gay community in Jamaica. And I think I really got more involved primarily because of my own personal experiences of homophobic violence, where I have been chased out of communities in which I lived. I've been physically abused by police officers. So, you know, for me, I see it as advocacy,
mm-hmm.
as a means of getting back at a system and challenging a system to become more responsive to the the issues of gays and lesbians and to respect and uphold gays and lesbians' basic human rights and to treat us as equals.
Mm-hmm. In a country where there's so much homophobia, I mean, how did you figure out that you were gay? How do you come in contact with the concept of homosexuality, and do you struggle with the fact that, like, were you upset about the fact that you were gay, or were you?
Oh yeah, there were times when I was mad. There were times when I was really, really furious because I grew up in the church. It was so interested that I grew up with my mother and my grandmother, but neither the two were Christians. But they think that, you know, I gave too much trouble, and the best thing way to solve the problem was to send me to church on Saturdays and then send me to church on Sundays. So it was school and church, that's all I was able to do. But, you know, I realized that I like guys, and I wasn't able to talk to my parents about that. And I didn't know what it was, and I always see this man in our town who the people always pass and say, call him Batman, and throw things at him and that kind of thing. And I asked my mother one day, you know, why they did it, and she told me, because he sleeps with other men, you know, and he likes other boys and that kind of thing, and I must stay away from him because it's not a good thing. That was what told me that, you know, at no point in time talk to my mom about that. So when I moved away from home and then got involved with this group of gay men, that was when I really understand, you know, who I was and the whole thing of understanding when someone would say gay or homosexual, what it really meant.
Mm-hmm. So how many queers are involved in the community in Jamaica? I mean, we hear about all of the attacks and the people who are dying, but I mean, how big is the community, would you say?
Well, with my work with JFLAG, I come in contact with over 3,000 gays and lesbians.
Wow.
And that is just for persons who are out and persons who I am able to reach as a result of my job. So I would say that it's a much larger community than that.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the persons, you know, dare not come forward or want to be known as that they are gays and lesbians. So, you know, and which is so challenging because, you know, those persons oftentimes are excluded from some of the things that we do, the social activities that we do, are excluded from the community interaction and cohesion, excluded from needed information as it relates to, you know, personal development, HIV, AIDS, and the list goes on, which is also sad.
Mm-hmm. Was Jamaica always this hostile to gays, or has it become worse in the last few years?
Based on the statistics that I've gathered since being involved with JFLAG, it has been on the increase. For example, in 2004, there were 5 murders. 2005, there were 7. Now, in 2007, there were 11 murders. And the incidents in terms of the mob attacks are also on the increase and that kind of thing and so forth. So the level of hostility is on the rise. And I think it has been fueled particularly because consecutive governments and political leaders have said, you know, that under their administration, you know, the sodomy laws will not be repealed, and there is no room in their cabinet for gays and lesbians, and that the violence that the gay community say that is happening to them, this is not so. And I've in the past used songs with homophobic content as a part of their political campaign. Mm-hmm. And that sends a strong message and also reinforces the level of homophobia in our society. When we find that the church, you know, continue to preach hate and damnation as it relates to gays and lesbians, and Jamaica is deemed to be a Christian nation, again, that fuels how intense the homophobia will be. And the reggae music that we all love so much and we boast so much about, Jamaican reggae music, you know, our reggae music has now become hate songs. I put them, and you find artists singing and promoting hate and violence mm-hmm. in their songs, you know, that also reinforces the level of homophobia that is in our society.
Mm-hmm. So what was JFLAG really doing in Jamaica? Can you make progress with governments or police as advocates, or were you mostly a support network for the queer community?
Broadly, we are, as it is now, we are basically a support network for the community. It's extremely, extremely difficult to make much progress as it relates to litigation and working with the government in terms of changing, improving the systems that exist that gays and lesbians will need to access. Those are the challenges that we face. One, financial constraints. There are some serious financial constraints. There are some human resource constraints, because not many persons want to really come on board, because it's a high risk kind of a job that, you know, it's basically like you're saying, you're setting yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you get involved with JFA, like for me, I've been involved with JFA. When I think of them going and being gainfully employed outside of JFA, I can't. Nobody wants to employ me, because I'm known to be the person who works with the gay and lesbian community.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's extremely, extremely difficult. And so for us, what is very important and crucial is the ability to form partnerships or network with other international organizations that will help us in terms of designing and implementing campaigns that can and will put pressure on the Jamaican government to become more responsive to the needs of gays and lesbians.
Mm-hmm. So is that what you plan on doing from Canada now? What do you see your role being now that you're in Toronto?
Yes, definitely. Definitely it will be a part of what I'll want to continue to do to help to possibly save the lives of my other friends who are left behind.
Mm-hmm. Are you? Do you have other friends in Jamaica that are in imminent danger? Are you trying to help other people get out of the country?
I have other friends who are back home in Jamaica who are in a similar position that I was in. It's extremely difficult for former persons to leave, again, because of the, you know, you need a visa to leave and all that kind of thing and so forth. And, you know, not everyone is at, whilst their life is at risk, you know, not everybody is at the place immediately to make a decision to say, I have to leave now, and can actually get up and leave at that same point in time. Because, again, you know, on the heel of I leaving, you know, I had to be thinking about my mother. My mother in particular, and how she's going to feel, how she's going to respond to the whole issue. And what was so sad about the whole thing was that just the week before I was packing up to leave, you know, she, for the first time, she got ill and was hospitalized. And, you know, it was really, really, you know, it's like saying, oh, should I go? You know, can I really leave my mother in the hospital? And so I had to go. I spent a week with her. Every day I was at the hospital with her, and I was, no, we talked about it, and she, you know, she said to me, Gareth, I will be okay, and I think, you know, the best thing you need to do is to go, because I want you to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, so, you know, those are some of some possible, so that was my situation. I think, you know, other gay men would have kind of similar situations of how to process knowing that you're going to leave, and when you leave, you might not be able to return to your country for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Are you going to leave behind family and friends? You know, how are you going to deal with that? And it's part is to get the assurance from, particularly, you know, if you are family members, to get that assurance from a family member that they say, it's okay, I understand, it's the best thing for you, it's the best thing for us as a family.
Mm-hmm. And how's your family doing?
They're coping fine. They're doing very good with the whole thing. For me, you know, the whole thing, the ability to maintain and keep the line of communication open. And I think if that once that exists, you know, the bond and the connection will still be there.
Gareth Henry, who was speaking with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching, may be the first queer Jamaican to seek refugee status in Canada. But Michael Hayden, a police officer who recently came out in the Jamaican Star newspaper, is also applying for Canadian asylum. He fears for his life after being attacked by fellow officers several times, and at last report he was still in hiding. Meanwhile, Jamaica's Deputy Commissioner of Police, Mark Shields, has been quoted in the press as supporting sensitivity training for recruits. That was one of the demands protesters organized by the Metropolitan Community Churches brought to the Jamaican consulate in Miami, Florida, and in other cities on Valentine's Day. MCC's Reverend Nancy Wilson headed a contingent of religious leaders who met with Consulate General Richard Alacock and three top staff members in Miami for more than an hour. Wilson called the meeting a sign of progress, but did not rule out the possibility of calling for a global boycott of Jamaica until gays and lesbians are protected. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Erica Springer, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Mary Gay Hutcherson, Sherry Lunn and Heather Kitching contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Gay Chemists Support Fund of the Horizons Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WPSB Kane and WPSU University Park, Pennsylvania, KWMD Castleoff and Anchorage, Alaska, 2BOB Taree, New South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And I'm sorry for the bit of an interruption that we had, the abrupt end to our phone conversation.
We didn't hang up. It was the universe hung up.
That's right. There was a blip in the power supply in the neighborhood. All the lights just kind of went whoop whoop. And I'm not going to do that again.
Oh, okay.
Technical term.
Yeah, and everything went dark.
Yes,
and
it was rather
spooky.
Strange.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
The lights came back on, but none of the equipment did.
Yes,
until I discovered where the UPS was. And then we had to get the station engineer back in here and
get everything running again. In the old days, this used to happen a lot.
Which, thanks to those of you that pledge and give to KPFT, we're better able to recover from when we have an outage. So
exactly.
Make sure you call your pledge of support, 713-526-5738, to keep us on the air.
Yes, I wanted to let everybody know, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Mark Walsh, the GLBT representative from the Clinton campaign, and then followed by Tobias Wolf with the GLBT representative from the Obama campaign. Wanted to let you know, we had them on to inform you. That's what we do here. I tried to ask the questions similar to each person.
And
so that
fair and balanced
fair
way.
And oh,
just
God,
like
I don't
Fox.
Want to use fair and balanced.
No,
okay,
like
no. Fair. Hey. The American way, to ask similar questions so you out there listening could get a fair and accurate presentation from each of the campaigns so you can make your decision. That's what we do here.
I do want to let people know that there are so many important down-ballot races.
Exactly.
And we do not endorse here on KPFT. But
that was the next thing I was going to say.
There are two GLBT organizations in Houston that have made endorsements. One is Houston Area Stonewall Democrats, and one is the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Political Caucus PAC. So you can go to the websites for either of those organizations mm-hmm. to get the endorsements. If you haven't voted yet, if you're going to be voting tomorrow, make sure that you vote as early as you can, and make sure you come back to caucus for your candidate.
And plan on, considering what they're saying about how many people are going to be out voting tomorrow, and it's going to be a beautiful day, a little chilly, but try to get there. Plan on staying a long time. It may be an hour or so. I don't want to scare anyone off, but be prepared. It probably won't be any different than it had been for early voting, which was in many places an hour to hour and a half wait.
Right. And once again, we want to remind you to call and pledge to Queer Voices, 713-526-5738. Thank you to all of those folks that did pledge their support tonight. And I want to remind everyone that next Saturday, March the 8th, International Women's Day, Lucy Blue Tremblay, who's an internationally acclaimed artist, a French-Canadian, will be here in Houston with the Breast Exam Project. There's a social time starting at 5:30 p.m., a potluck, and the concert starting at 7 p.m. This is being produced by Diva House Concerts and Loaf, the lesbians over age 50. It is a non-profit venture. All money goes to the Breast Exam Project and is tax deductible. This will be at the Houston ARE Center, 7800 Amelia Road at Johanna. That's over in Spring Branch off of Wirt Road. And if you would like more information, you can go to LucyBlueTremblay.com, and Tremblay is spelled Tremblay, Lucy, Lucie, BlueTremblay.com. You also can call 832-771-1903. Or contact me, Deborah Bell, through Deborah@QueerVoices.org.
If you've got any time left, please call and pledge, 713-526-5738.
Call now, 713-526-5738. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
If you think HIV and AIDS is no longer a problem, think again. In Houston, someone becomes infected with the HIV virus every 8 hours, and 1 in 100 Houstonians is HIV positive. There is no cure, but it's a deadly disease that can be treated and prevented. You can protect yourself and others by getting tested and learning more about this deadly disease. You can also help by lacing up your sneakers and taking to the streets. Join AIDS Foundation Houston in the fight against HIV/AIDS on Saturday, March 9th, for the 19th annual AIDS Walk Houston. Last year, 15,000 Houstonians took part in the walk, raising nearly $1 million. Each step brings us closer to the day when AIDS will be just a memory. With your participation, we can give thousands of men, women, and children a reason for hope. For more information about AIDS Walk Houston, call 713-403-WALK. That's 713-403-9255. Or log on to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org. You're listening to KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, radio for peace.
Do more channels have less to say? Help shape the future at the Texas Community Media Summit. Join Texas media makers, advocates, and activists at the University of Texas in Austin on Saturday, March 1st. For details, go to texascommunitymedia.org. That's texascommunitymedia.org.
The Texas Community Media Summit brings together folks from all kinds of community media: art, theater, print, radio, film, TV, and internet. The one-day summit is organized by Channel Austin, Dallas iMedia Network, Houston Media Source, and the Texas Media Empowerment Project.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.